everyone has the Toronto Raptors as legitimate contenders to be able to at least push the Warriors the way that they're built up with the addition of Kawhi Leonard, the play of Danny Green, Kyle Lowry's electricity. But there could be an argument to be made that they might not even get out of the East because of a certain Milwaukee team that's standing in their way with one Giannis Antetokounmpo in the way. One Lopez brother being a prolific three-point shooter all of a sudden for the Bucks, and with them having the option to add at the deadline. So right now, what do you make up of the East? What do you think is the most likely scenario to happen?
Well, I think the Raptors are the best team in the East right now. But in addition to the Bucks being very good, I think by the end of the season, the Celtics will be very good. The 76ers have the potential to be very good by the end of the season. They have that star power, but they lost a lot of depth in the Jimmy Butler trade. They'll have a chance to regain some of that before the trade deadline. They have some assets they could move, a future first-round pick, Markel Fultz. They have the ability to get that depth sooner than later. And the Pacers, I think, are capable of beating any of those top four teams. Now, I don't think they quite have the talent level, so I wouldn't predict them to beat anybody. But if the Raptors get matched up with them in a playoff series, that would not be easy. So I think it's a tough road. I would definitely take the field over any of those teams in the East because there are just so many teams capable of getting to the finals.
So Dan is basically saying any four teams below the Raptors can beat the Raptors. I mean, it's tough. I know I'm looking at the standings right now and everyone talks about the Celtics. Oh, the Celtics. Oh, the Celtics. And you know, they're going to get it together and they're heating up. At least Kyrie Irving is heating it up. He's had 20 or more points and 10 or more assists in 11 games. And the last time that was done, Larry Bird back in 86, 87. So at least Kyrie Irving is finding his game, but to me, the Celtics are still a little off. They're 5.5 games back, and Jason Tatum is good, but there just seems to be so many people to try to fit in still.
Yeah, but that's a good problem,
yeah,
right, where you have too many good players. Like, that's what gives me the belief that they could get there. I'm not saying it's an absolute lock, but one thing that I think bodes very well for the Celtics is their point difference, which tends to be a better predictor rather than record. Mm-hmm. And their point difference is very good. It seems like they've just been unlucky in close games. There's a school of thought that, hey, you lose a very close game, that's just kind of a coin flip. The good thing you did was get into a close game rather than just get blown out. Now, the very good teams blow everybody out, and the Raptors do that a little more often. And that's why it's part of the reason I say the Raptors are the best team in the East right now. But you look at the Celtics, Kyrie Irving has gotten in a much better groove as the season has gone on, like you said. So has Jason Tatum. So has Jaylen Brown. So has Gordon Hayward. Like, you go through the roster, and there are a lot of signs of progress. Not everywhere. I don't think Terry Rozier has really figured it out yet this season. But there's still a lot of time left. He still has the talent to do it. And so when I look at a team this talented, I think there's a decent chance by the end of the year, they're well coached with Brad Stevens, that they'll get there.
I actually think the biggest sign that they're going to get it together is the slice of humble pie that Kyrie Irving had to eat when he called LeBron James and kind of apologized for being a young punk, right? And not understanding the difficulty it takes to lead a team, not only be superior on your own and have performance that's going to be able to take your team to victories when not everything's going well, to be clutch and crunch time, but also to be able to talk to, relate, guide younger players while you worry about yourself. And I think Kyrie Irving coming out, talking to the media, kind of slagging his team, you know, to the cameras, even though it might have been fair, it might have been true. I think that now that he's kind of reevaluated his position and how difficult it is to be that guy on a team, I think that will go a long way to bringing these guys together. Some players which think they should have a bigger role because they did last year, they did well, and are kind of having trouble adjusting to playing a smaller role this year.
Absolutely. I think that is a sign of progress, but I still don't think it's the solution because Kyrie Irving basically figured out what he shouldn't do as a leader. He figured out that he went too far when he was criticizing his young players, his young teammates, and how he did it. He did not figure out how to do it. He just figured out how not to do it. So this is progress. I think his teammates welcome the admission from him, but he still has to show that he knows how to lead, how to teach these young players how to play at a championship level. And that's still a difficult task.
Last night, James Harden had his 20th straight game with 30 points or more, and he didn't even play the fourth. Unfortunately, it was in a kind of an ugly loss to Philly. Like, Philly was on fire. They almost felt like they were mocking Harden, like trying to get him to draw fouls. And I don't know if I like the vibe in that game, especially Embiid kind of mocking him. What was your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, I mean, the 76ers are capable at playing at a very high level because they have that star talent, and they did last night. The Rockets are not a great team right now. James Harden is a great player right now. The Rockets are not a great team because they have so many injuries. That's why they need Harden to do so much. But Harden is doing a great job of keeping them good. Like, there will be nights like that. It did not go well. It happens. But he still played at a very high level, still scored so much, and that's what he's capable of doing. And because of him, the Rockets are going to have a chance in all their games while Chris Paul is out, while Clint Capella is out. Not a lot of teams could survive injuries like that.
And you know what? You can say what you want about James Harden, and congratulations to him on his the usage that he's had, the points that he's scored. But, Dan, I do not enjoy my basketball that way, with unassisted buckets 90% of the games. It's just not a good look for me personally.
See, I don't mind the unassisted buckets. I find those very exciting. He goes and gets his own shots. It's the free throws, which I respect so much that he's able to do that, because these are real fouls. These are not flops.
Right.
He is just so crafty and capable. But I agree, that part of it's not fun to watch. It really breaks up the rhythm of the game. It makes the game too long. Like, I don't personally enjoy it so much, except for the parts where I really respect it.
Nice. I love that so much. You're just like, yeah, it's okay, but not really. Please stop. Don't do that ever, even though I understand what you're doing and how you're scoring points. But listen, he needs to get a break somehow. He needs to get a break in the action and kind of slow it down, give himself a chance to recuperate, at least cardiovascularly.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big worry, is that, sure, those free throws are a nice break during the game, but over the season, is he going to be able to maintain playing this way? It is exhausting, where you have to do everything. I don't know what he's going to look like at the end of the season. That's a real worry for him and the Rockets.
It's definitely a setup for a burnout. We're talking to Dan Feldman, NBA writer for NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk. Let's move to... well, still actually kind of Houston, but Carmelo Anthony. Houston Rockets have agreed to send Melo and Cash to the Chicago Bulls. Anthony, you know, a prolific player, 10-time All-Star. He will not be playing for the Bulls. They plan on waiving him or trading him, but where do you see him potentially ending up? Because it's difficult for someone in his position to not at this point at least toy with the idea of just understanding where you're at in your career, putting your ego aside if you still want to be in the NBA, and just deciding that you're going to be a role player, because otherwise your defensive limitations don't really allow you to be part of much in terms of a team that's going to be making a push for the postseason.
I think, to his credit, Carmelo Anthony did a lot of the things people have been asking him to do as a role player with the Rockets. He came off the bench at times. He shot three-pointers. He got rid of a lot of his mid-range shots. He did everything everybody wanted, and he still wasn't good enough. I think his body might just not allow him to play at an NBA level anymore. He might just be washed up. I think there'll probably still be a team that will roll the dice on him because of his name, because of what he's done. But I don't see an NBA player anymore. Even as just a scorer, he is no longer efficient enough to justify really having a big role, or even much of a role at all. So if he can't do that, obviously he's not going to be a passer. He's not a defender. He's not a rebounder. He doesn't do anything else. I don't see an NBA player anymore.
Quite frankly, the Bulls aren't doing much either. They finally broke their 10-game losing streak against Cleveland last night, who's the bottom of the East, so really one of them had to win. But, man, if I'm the Bulls, I just put Melo out there. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, God, do you want to add fuel to the tire fire, Sherry? I don't think so.
Yeah, it can't get much worse. Or can it?
I mean, you already got Jabari Parker as a younger Melo. I don't know why you need two of them.
No, you really don't. Sometimes it's less is more, as they say.
Because it'd be fun to watch.
I don't know. Everyone loves, I guess, that car wreck on the side of the highway, but I don't know if I want to see that on a basketball court. What we did get a chance to see, though, was DeMarcus Cousins making his return. And honestly, I'm kind of torn about DeMarcus Cousins. I know he has a very bad reputation in terms of the media and how he kind of treats people or has treated people and his attitude, but really well liked in the locker room and among his peers. All accounts say that he's one of the guys and he's fit in really well and kind of bought into this Warriors system. And his performance and the way that he was received by his team and the fans in the stand, it was kind of an endearing moment for me. I was like, okay, DeMarcus Cousins, maybe this is kind of where you turn things around and rehabilitate your image a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think people, especially his teammates, respect how hard he has had to work to come back from this injury. That's a grueling process, rehabbing from something like that. And for him to make it all the way back, that's respectable, but he's got to keep it up. He has to have the right attitude throughout. And DeMarcus Cousins is a very talented player, and I think overall he's probably been criticized too much for some of the issues that he brings. I mean, he was with the Kings for so long. It's such a dysfunctional organization. I think a lot of things got pinned on him that weren't deserved. That doesn't make him perfect. He still has some attitude issues, some emotional maturity issues, or at least did. Maybe this is him turning the corner, and being with the Warriors, a team with a great culture, will really be good for him.
I know that the Lakers took another direct hit on the weekend. Obviously, LeBron is out, and it sucks for the game because LeBron, you just love watching LeBron every night, and he's missed 11 games. He's not going to make this road trip, so he misses another two. But after his doctor's appointment yesterday, they said he will return to practice next week, which is great news. However, Lonzo Ball will be out 4 to 6 weeks with an MRI that showed a grade 3 ankle sprain. They're only one game out of eighth. I'm just one of those people that would like to see them make the playoffs because LeBron is a difference maker, and I guess you just never know.
Right. I mean, it would be such a shame. And if there's anything that would change how the NBA structures its playoffs, it would be LeBron James missing them with a team with a record better than multiple Eastern Conference teams that make the playoffs. Like, that would really be what convinced people something is broken. But I tend to think LeBron will get them into the playoffs. He has shown really throughout the last few years that he gears it up just as much as he needs to. That, you know, his effort level, he'll coast when he can, save some energy for deep in the playoffs. But when he needs to get his team to a certain number of wins in the regular season, when he needs to step up in certain games, he does. That's part of the reason his teams, when I talk about point difference being a better predictor than win percentage, LeBron's teams defy that. Because once they get into a close game, LeBron says, okay, I'm going to take over. I'm going to make sure we win this one. Now, if the game's out of hand, he might turn it off. And so his teams look different, and that's why I think he'll tend to get the Lakers into the playoffs. But it's not easy. He can play great, and the West is so good that you catch a bad break here or there. That might be the difference.
The West is so tight, and it's almost got to be frustrating for teams that are on the cusp. And with the trade deadline coming up on February 7th, there are some teams that need to make a decision. I'm wondering what you think the Grizzlies are planning on doing, because we know that management met with Marc Gasol and Mike Conley. And, you know, sometimes there are these checks and balances between your franchise player and your ownership, and you just kind of touch base. But it seems as though there is an opportunity here for the Grizzlies to just decide, listen, we've lost a ton of games over the last little while. We've definitely fallen out of eighth in the standings in the Western Conference. What are we going to do? Because Memphis traded 2 unprotected second round picks to acquire Justin Holiday from the Chicago Bulls earlier this month. So that kind of nods to, we're going all in with this group, but after you've fallen out, is there a change in direction?
I can't think of a team in the NBA with less vision than the Grizzlies. So there are plenty of teams with misguided visions who are trying to do the wrong things. But I don't know if the Grizzlies internally know what they're doing. They pull themselves in so many different directions. Last year, I think, was the perfect example where you had Mike Conley hurt, where you were just sinking in the standings. You were way out of the race. The way you were structuring your player rotations was as if you were tanking. And then you refused to trade Tyreek Evans at the trade deadline, get an asset for him. He's a free agent. He's going to walk. You don't even have his bird rights. You have no advantage of retaining him. There's no reason not to trade him. He was the most obvious trade player in the NBA, and you keep him. That, to me, speaks to just how little vision the Grizzlies have. And so they've got to make this hard choice about, especially Marc Gasol, who can become a free agent next summer, decide whether he's going to be there long term. If he's not going to be in Memphis beyond the season, you've got to trade him. If you want to keep him, if you want to try and keep competing, even if it's going to be hard, even if the odds are against you, I don't mind that. You don't need to be a playoff lock to try to make the playoffs, but you need to realistically assess where they are. And I've seen very little evidence that the Grizzlies actually do that. Hopefully for them, this meeting was a step in that direction of asking Gasol those hard questions of, do you plan to opt out? Will you resign? For how much? What would it take? Might you leave? And get a sense of where he is. But I don't trust the Grizzlies to answer those questions internally and then make a decision based on it.
Yeah, the Grizzlies seem like the type where Gasol's like, I'm not staying. And they're like, oh, I don't know. I think he kind of didn't answer with that much enthusiasm. I think he might stay. Let's try and woo him. And it's like, are you listening? Are you really, really paying attention here?
You know what? I'd give them credit if that's where they stood, though, because that's a real evaluation.
Okay.
Sometimes you can change somebody's mind, but they might just not even ask directly. Like, that's where I see them standing more. If they ask and they say, hey, he wasn't enthusiastic about either, but we think we can convince him, that's an evaluation, because Gasol's always talked about his loyalty to Memphis, how much he likes it there, and I believe that to be true. He also wants to win, and so he's reaching a point in his career where he's going to have to make some tough decisions about what he wants, and you know, if the Grizzlies evaluate where he stands, that's great, but you got to make that evaluation.
Speaking of tough decisions, obviously the trade deadline is February 7th. What do you do if you're the GM of the Raptors? Do you go out and you get Bradley Beal? What do you do?
Yeah, I'd be interested in Bradley Beal. Sure, I think the cost is going to be too high, but that's a phone call you've got to make. The Raptors are in a good spot, in a spot where a trade seems unlikely just because they're so deep. Like, where do you upgrade? It's hard to get a difference maker when you have so much depth on this roster. There aren't a lot of weak spots. Another shooter on the wing would be nice. Mm-hmm. You know, CJ Miles hasn't had the season everybody wants, but that's what everybody in the league wants, and the Raptors are fine there. I just don't know if they'll have the motivation to go get somebody like that. So I would expect it to be a fairly quiet trade deadline for Toronto, maybe something small, moving Malachi Richardson or something like that to save on the luxury tax bill. But I think the ownership has shown a willingness to get into the tax. I'm not sure there's a desperation to lower that tax bill. So I don't really expect anything huge from the Raptors. But at the same way, because they have so much depth, they have the ability to get involved in some trades and consolidate and move somebody. But that's going to depend on who's selling, who's available, how many players that would be true upgrades for Toronto will be available. And there just might not be any. Be that many, because so many teams will see themselves in the playoff race. Mm-hmm. It's so tight in both conferences that I'm just not sure there'll be enough sellers for a deep team like the Raptors to find a difference maker.
And you really don't want to get caught making a lateral move, right? Why would you want to make a move for someone who's just as serviceable as someone on your roster? Then you mess with chemistry and you find yourself in a whole nother situation. And it is very difficult at the trade line to find those upgrades that you can really look not only on paper, but look where they would fit in the culture of a team and be like, yes, that's a win for this team. It's not as easy as some people may make it sound. And you said it, you're like, well, they want a shooter on the wing. Well, everyone wants a shooter on the wing that can play defense. It's called 3 and D for a reason. And it's a cutout role in the league for a reason. It's because it's desirable.
Exactly. That's an excellent point. It's especially for a team like the Raptors that, number one, has shown such strong chemistry. Number two, is still developing its chemistry with Kawhi Leonard coming in. You don't want to disrupt that midseason. And so it would take a clear upgrade, and that makes it even less likely that the Raptors find the right piece to actually pull the trigger on the deal.
Are you convinced that the Wizards even want to move Bradley Beal?
Oh, no, they definitely do not. I mean, they might be willing to, but they definitely do not. They want to build around him, and, you know, they want good players. They want to win now. They want to win in the future, and Bradley Beal is capable of doing that. He's on a solid contract. He's got a couple extra years left on it. They've got team control. They definitely do not want to move him, and that's why I doubt any team will make them an offer that moves them off that stance. I do think it's possible to move them off that stance with a strong enough offer, but this is going to be hard. And, you know, I don't see the Raptors in particular, but really any team pooling together enough assets to get the Wizards to move Beal.
Well, really, they're just buried under this John Wall problem that seemingly there might not be a solution for.
Right. And so, you know, the Wizards are in a bad spot regardless of what they do. But once you have John Wall, it's going to prevent you from bottoming out and tanking too hard. So you might as well try to win. Even if that's going to be futile, I still think that's a better strategy than trying to tank, which also would be futile.